The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Yahoo Sports Radio 1560.
Davis tries to crack, and it's in!
KGOW Bel Air Houston, a Gal Media radio station. You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo. Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gal building overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, pleased to be joined by Dynamo assistant Sandy Stewart. Sandy, thank you very much for coming on the program.
It's a pleasure, Glenn.
Great to have you here. Listen, let's just talk a little bit about your history, you and Owen, because you and Owen Coyle go back in so many different ways, as playing together, him managing, you managing. Talk about it.
Yeah. Well, first started, Owen came to Airdrieonings when I was a player there, and the two of us played. We were there for 2 years before he joined Bolton Wanderers in England. And then, obviously, Owen come back. I was actually at Airdrie for 12 years as a player and 5 years as a manager, I'm on right. So he come back to Airdrie 2 or 3 times. In my capacity there, I was there as a player. And then I also had him when I was manager. He was one of my players. And then he became my assistant manager. So we've known each other for a long time. It's a good friendship. And then he got the St Johnstone job, left Airdrie, got the St Johnstone job. And then I left, joined him. And then we went to Burnley, Bolton, Wigan, and now here.
Okay, you know the question I'm going to ask you. What was it like coaching Owen Coyle?
The one thing I always remember, and he'll tell you himself, he was the best goal scorer in the league, so I don't need to tell you that. But the thing that I do remember is when you used to take him off, which wasn't very often, may I add, but when you took him off and he came off and he wouldn't look at you, he knew he shouldn't have been taken off. Well, he thought he shouldn't have been taken off. But as a team manager, you've got a decision to make for the team. So, as I said, it only happened in a couple of occasions, but he let you know about it.
What type of a striker was he? Explain to us.
He was a very hard-working striker. First and foremost, we always say you do the hard work, and that's exactly what he done. He ran the channels, but one thing he did do, he always got himself in the box. When a cross came in, you can tell with the build on him, he wasn't the most, he wasn't going to push people out the road and stuff like that, so it was all about sharpness and a razor-sharp mind. He always get his foot in there. But what he was, one and one with a goalkeeper, there wasn't anybody better in the country that I'd ever seen. I'm talking about whether you're playing five-a-sides, training games, and in the games. When he was one and one with a goalkeeper, more times than not, he scored. And he let you know it, because I think he's told me he scored 297 goals. Now, I don't know about him, but I could tell you every goal he scored, because he's told me that many times. But no, he was one of the players when you played with him. He was a delight, because, as I said, he'd done a lot of hard work for the team as well. Wasn't he just a poacher who stood in 6-yard box and scored goals? He was all over the place helping the team.
He's Sandy Stewart, Dynamo assistant, professional soccer player in Scotland, also a manager there. So what's your take on Major League Soccer so far? Because, you know, this was a quick plunge into it here. The Dynamo have made a lot of progress this season under Owen Coyle and his staff, including you. What's Major League Soccer's first impressions to Sandy Stewart?
I think it's very hard. I think every single game you go out, there's a lot of teams on an even keel. And any given day, I think anybody could beat any other team in. When you go back to Britain, particularly England, what you might tend to find is you might think there's one or two easy games. You can change your team around for a little bit to suit. I don't think that's the case in MLS. I think it's very competitive, and on any given day, any team can win. I think the standard is high. I think it's also getting better. believe it or not, myself and Owen, we took an interest. We obviously took an interest in MLS because we brought teams here the last 6 or 7 years. We always felt we got a fantastic competitive game with great surroundings, great training facilities. The people were really hospitable. It was a fantastic place to come pre-season. But we knew that it was changing, it was getting better. And for what we've seen so far, that's definitely the case.
What has been the biggest challenge for you? I mean, obviously, I would have to say this is not Scotland weather here. We're in the 90s, humid as anything. So that's got to be one of them. And maybe you even, with the climate change, have to look at managing your teams differently.
Yes, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think the training that we've done and with the intensity that we've done it back in England and Scotland, you've got to take a little bit off because it's not possible here. And it wouldn't be possible for the English teams to come over and train in this climate either, at that intensity. So you've got to give them more breaks. You've got to give them maybe a wee bit less time in between doing functions. To be perfectly honest, it can be a plus because you can get your points across a little bit better. You've got a little bit better time. Players understand that. So that's no problem. When you're coaching in England and Scotland, if it's 50 mile an hour winds and it's raining, it's very difficult to get people in the middle and try and explain like shape and the position of the players that you want them in and stuff like that. Whereas here, it can be done quite easily and people become receptive to it. So in that respect, it's definitely an advantage.
He's Sandy Stewart joining us here on ESPN 97.5. What else around the league? What about the travel? What about the differing surfaces? I know you and I had a conversation about that. Boy, these are all factors you got to come in, and now you're not on the world schedule, so now you got players coming in and out. Their loyalties are stretched in different directions for their country and the Dynamo, and you guys have five of your biggest games of the year coming up here, and four out of five opponents in the Western Conference.
Yes, that's definitely. It was a hard one, especially at the weekend when we felt we'd come off a really good result against the New York Red Bulls, played particularly well the second half. The players that we'd put in against Austin gave us a good shift. There was a wee bit of competition there. And then you go and lose four. No disrespect to the other ones, but you would say starters from your 11. And I think any team anywhere would lose a wee bit of cohesion with that. And it was very difficult. The players that came in done well, but obviously the players that we'd lost were good, big-time players for us. So in that respect, I think Portland gained an advantage. And when you talk about back in Britain, that doesn't happen because international calendar, the games stop. If you've got more than two players out, you can cancel your game. So the likes of that, we'd have cancelled our game at the weekend, so you wouldn't have had that. And I think it was definitely a disadvantage to us. As far as the travelling, that's concerned as well. We maybe travel 3-4 hours maximum, but we don't have to go and sit in an airport for 2 hours beforehand. We don't have to sit in an airport 2 hours after and stuff like that. So the time difference, yes, it's definitely new to us, but it's something that we're enjoying, but we need to learn. That's what we can learn from the players themselves, and we've got to structure our training because of that. The different surfaces, there's no doubt about it, it's an advantage. I don't think people at Seattle and Portland will say it's a disadvantage playing grass. I don't think that at all. I think it's natural. So I think when it comes to that, it's definitely an advantage to them.
Now, I've seen so many managers come to this league that had big reputations as players and fail miserably. I think because they didn't seem to really be open in some ways to learning. You guys obviously have come here. I've seen the way you've handled yourselves. You guys have been very open to seeing how this all works as you navigate all this newness.
Yeah, definitely. There's no doubt about it. As I said, we can learn. Even the likes of Wade Barrett, who was here when we came in, we can pick up tips from him as far as the day-to-day running, the training schedule and everything else that goes about it. So, no, we knew people's reputations coming in that had maybe been here before and didn't embrace the league as well as what everybody would like. No, because we were in England, we didn't make a point of saying we were in England, we know everything about soccer. Far from it. This is the MLS. The people in the MLS will be able to teach us.
How's you and your family adjusted to the city of Houston? Because we're pretty south here. The weather's different. It's a big, massive city. Not that you haven't been in big, massive cities, but how have you liked Houston?
No, well, one thing I do realise, it's expansive. In Glasgow, where I stay, there's a high-rise building every 2 seconds, and as you go further out, there's more. It's more and more populated, so it's a wee bit different that way. The family, they're still in Scotland just now. My boy's at university, and he he plays professional soccer over in Scotland. So he's still there, and my wife didn't want to leave him and whatever. Like, he's a baby of the family, so he gets all the attention. So they come back was in forwards. We've had good trips. Just lately, I got a chance to go back for five or six days in the international break that we had, and it was good to see everybody. But no, I'm just delighted with the culture, and as I said, I love the heat. Don't know if I like it quite as hot as this, but I love the sunshine and working with the sunshine, so I've got no problem whatsoever.
Why is it that Glasgow and the country of Scotland produces so many managers? And I've asked Owen Coyle this question too, but so many very successful managers. It's almost like it's in the blood of the Scotsman.
I think it's a background that you're brought up in, working class. I think everybody that's became a very good manager, very successful manager, has all came from a working class background in Scotland, where you had to fight for everything, you had to stand up for yourself, you didn't accept second best, and you had that will to win. And I think when you put all the ingredients into a manager, that's exactly the credentials that you need, and they stand you in good stead. And it's just that willingness to succeed, and succeed at any cost.
I notice with you and Owen, there's a lot of man managing going on. You guys talk with players. You're engaged with player one at the top and all the way down in the pecking order to every single player. It seems to me you bring possibility to all of them, and that's very important to you, because I guess if players at the back end of a roster lose possibility, they could lose incentive.
Well, do you know what, Glenn? I take it from my own experience as a player. I mean, I wasn't always a first pick. When I went to Airdrie first, I was on the bench for a period of time, and my manager always came up and spoke to me, and he gave me confidence, and he gave me that will to keep going, and if you keep working hard, you'll succeed, whether it be at this club or whether it be at somewhere else's, but you will succeed at a certain level. And I've took that on through my managerial career and my coaching career, that it doesn't matter what at that particular time where that player is. Who's to say in 5 weeks' time he won't become one of your most important players? And even then, if they don't make it at Houston Dynamo, I want them to make it somewhere else. And it's my job and my responsibility to, when they leave this club, at whatever stage they leave it at, to make them a better player and a better person than when they come in. And that doesn't happen if you ignore people, no matter where they are in the pecking order. And it's so important. I always felt as a player, when my manager spoke to me, if my manager didn't speak to me, I thought I was doing something wrong. When he came and spoke to me, whatever he was telling me, I always felt better for it. So I always put myself in that player's situation. And I feel if I go and speak to the players, they might not agree with what I'm going to say. They might not say it's true, but you can only tell them. And hopefully they'll take that on board. And when they become a manager, a coach, they'll take the same attributes on board. And they'll realise that it does definitely helps the player, no matter what place they are in the roster.
He's Dynamo assistant Sandy Stewart. How about a quick word on FC Dallas? Team with overall great team speed, a great counter-attacking team. Yep. They can cause you problems. How do you approach that one up at in Frisco?
Well, I think first and foremost at home, we got caught a little bit cold, particularly early on. I mean, I do know the stats. They had five shots at goal and they scored four goals. And I think they get the two early goals through counter-attacking football. It suited them. They sat back. We had a lot of the ball. We got a fantastic goal back with Giles Barnes, and then we had a great chance just on a stroke at half time. Jermaine done a fantastic run and just happened to miss the target. But I think as far as that goes, we need to be aware. That's what they're looking for. They're looking to suck you in to hit you on a counter attack. Whether they play the same type of way at home, I've looked at the videos. I don't think so. I think they'll maybe attack you a wee bit more, and hopefully then, who knows what we'll do. We've got plans for it, put it that way. But we'll soon find out on Friday where they come into fruition.
Sandy, thank you very much for your time. I'm sure the listeners appreciate this great candid interview. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Glenn. It was a pleasure.
All right, that's Dynamo assistant Sandy Stewart joining us here. Some great insight there. How about that conversation about managing players? We'll take a break here. The Best in Soccer Talk will continue.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo, Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gow Building overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
The road is the last game before we get those national team players back. So,
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. Well, coming up, we'll have the manager of the Houston Dash, Randy Waldrum, brought to you by, yes, the one and only Bud Light. We thank Bud Light for their great support of not only women's soccer, but Major League Soccer. Bud Light reminds you to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium, catch the Houston Dash in action, catch the Houston Dynamo in action, and you can get season tickets over at HoustonDynamo.com. All kinds of great packages over there for both the Dynamo and Dash. And upcoming Dash game will be July 12th. The Dash will take on the Chicago Red Stars. And you know what? There's going to be a number of national team players likely back for that game. And that will be one that you want to put a circle around, because all six Dash players still involved with the Women's World Cup right now with both the United States and Canada. So Bud Light, we thank you for your great support of soccer on the radio. Personally, I thank Bud Light for all their support over the years for helping get soccer and me on the radio. Okay, with that, we bring in Randy Waldrum, the head coach of the Houston Dash. Randy, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. How are you?
Excellent. And I think we're all excited to get your take sort of on the Women's World Cup so far. Let's just get sort of your broad look at it. Anything that really jumps out to you about this World Cup in Canada with the expanded field?
Well, I think it's been my initial thoughts would be I think the expansion was great, even though a few of those new teams, you know, got blown out. But I think in order to grow the women's game, that has to happen. So I think the expansion part was great, although I know a lot of people have debated that. But for me personally, I think it's the way we have to go. The other thing that surprised me a little bit, Glenn, is I thought early on the powers, the world powers, hadn't really performed up to par, including the U.S. I thought Germany looked sluggish. I thought France early on did. But now as the tournament's gone on, it's been really interesting to see. The last two games, Germany has looked really strong. Looks like they're coming into form. France the same way. Their last two games, they started to perform really well. And I think the question everybody asks now is, what about the U.S.? Because we still have not really found our way offensively. So this is going to be an interesting quarterfinal round coming up this Friday and Saturday.
Any players that have sort of identified you themselves to you maybe in this tournament? I mean, you've got a finger on the pulse, but, you know, we got some great surprises with Nganamut from Cameroon, Nganame, a number of different players that maybe the world didn't really know about that have kind of shined in this tournament.
Well, both of those players certainly caught my eye for sure. I thought with Nigeria, I thought Ordega is with the Washington Spirit, you know, had a good tournament. I thought Akobi for them was very good as well. I like, even though they're known in Europe, but maybe not known so much in the U.S., the three forwards on the Netherlands I quite like. Mellis and Martins and Medeme, I thought, were all really good. So there's been, you know, we've been keeping our eye on it, obviously for selfish reasons, as we're still trying to fill an international spot, but also for seeing what's out there in the world's game. And the nice thing about it is a lot of these players are very young, Glenn. And so I think that really bodes well for the future of the women's game.
All right, so we got U.S., China, we got France, Germany, unbelievable bracketing there. Japan and Australia, England and Canada. Many are going to say the U.S., China, France, Germany side of the bracket obviously is stronger. I think it would be tough not to agree with that. Let's talk U.S., China, because China, here's a team. I had an opportunity to call one of their games, Randy. It's a team to me that has grown in the tournament. They're difficult to break down. They've gotten a little better offensively in the last two games. What's your take on U.S. China?
Well, I think it's just the same, Glenn, with China. I look at them the same way that you just mentioned. I think they're very disciplined, obviously. I think they're going to be hard to break down. They haven't conceded much in the tournament. And I do think they've gotten a little bit better and a little bit better every game. They're one of those teams that have kind of flown under the radar screen somewhat, you know. So I think with the struggles that the U.S. has had offensively, if we don't really put it together, I think this game could be a long game for the U.S. I still think we'll win. We'll find a way. But I think it'll be a closer game than people anticipate. You know, I thought last game with Colombia, I really thought that was going to be a game we were going to put it all together and really blow Colombia out. And quite frankly, had it not been for the red card in the second half, that game could have gone down to the wire as well, as Colombia played really well. So I think it's going to be a closer game. I think the U.S. will find a way to win.
Are countries like Colombia and countries like, you know, and I know you and I have talked about this before, but a couple of years ago, I guess 4 or 5 years ago, maybe the last World Cup or the Olympics or somewhere back 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I looked at France and I said, wow, technically this is a great group of ladies here. Then they get in the final third and they just didn't have the power and strength and the thrust. And now it seems like they've married the athletic side with the technique and the passion of the French soccer-playing nation. And, boy, now they're a team to really be reckoned with.
Well, that's the scary thing. You know, when we talk about the rest of the world catching up to the U.S., you know, I made a comment before the World Cup to some media outlet, and I said, I don't think they're catching up. I think they've caught us, you know. And I think that's where they've caught us, because we've always gotten by so much on our strength and power and athleticism. As you said, it just is a matter of time for these other countries to put the resources into their women's teams. And now to develop, you know, you're kind of through that first generation of French players. Now you're in that second generation of French players where they are now better athletes. So they're putting the skill together. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, teams maybe had the technical ability, but those countries didn't have the athletes. Now you're seeing Colombia get a few more of the athletes. You're seeing the French, obviously, now have the athletes married with that technical and that tactical aspect. So I think that's why those countries have really, really closed that gap on us. Now, the French team is awfully good. I think they're in Germany. I think those two teams, I think we could all argue that could be a final right there. And it's unfortunate that they play each other so early, but it should be a great game.
He's Randy Waldrum at Notre Dame, won a national championship. He is the head coach of the Houston Dash, has coached U.S. national teams at various age levels. Let's go back to the U.S. because I found it very interesting after the Colombia game that there was a large wave of people that weren't accepting that this was a good soccer game. And, you know, it went beyond just results, Randy. You know, so much in America is judged on results. But now we had a media, we had fans saying they weren't happy with the playing style. I found this to be very, very healthy and very positive for the growth of the sport.
I do too, Glenn, because I think the difference, you go back to 1999 when we won it in the U.S. and Tony was our coach, nobody cared how we played. You know, we weren't great in that final game against China that we won it, but it was just the fact that we won and everybody was on the bandwagon because we won. Now then, all these years later, whatever, 16 years later, we've got educated fans that now want to see us not only win, but want to see us perform well. And I think that bodes well for the growth, you know, over these last 16 years since that World Cup, the education of the soccer fan in the U.S. So I think that's credit to MLS and all the youth, you know, programs around the country that have helped grow the game. So I think it's healthy too, you know, and it's when you have armchair quarterbacks sitting back, you know, on the weekends, talking about how poor and how our tactics were poor, our formation was poor, you probably arrived, you know, even though a lot of people would think that's unhealthy. I do think it just shows that we've really grown as a soccer nation.
Yeah, it seems to me that we do have to grow and we do have to mature. And if we want to be considered like the mainstream, then, you know, healthy criticism is fair. Look, we're always going to have a percentage of people that are just saying things for the sake of saying them with social media and everything. But, you know, you as well as I know, You and I have tons and tons of friends who have been invested in this game for a long time and know the game and have great opinions about it. So to me, it's just healthy and really raises the bar of where we could go in the future and how far we could stretch and reach.
Yeah, I think I agree with you totally. And I think that, you know, I think we'll see not only this U.S. team, but, you know, our future teams under pressure because we want to see us, you know, perform well and aesthetically, you know, we want it to be pretty and attractive. And I think, you know, Jurgen caught a little bit of this early, you know, in his time with the U.S. as well. And he has now started to get these young players to grow and develop and play with, you know, the men are playing a lot more pleasing to the eye now. So I think it's great for our country.
Randy Waldrum joining us. Let's switch gears to the Houston Dash. You guys come off a big win over Western New York. You're only 2 points off the lead now, and you had mentioned to me before we got on the air that this was a very complete performance from your team based on the fact that you've got a number of players missing, obviously six of them at the World Cup.
Yeah, I thought it was our best performance since those players left for the World Cup. Is we've either won games or tied games, and we've been either poor defensively and decent offensively, or we've been good defensively and not good offensively. We've never put the whole package together, and yet here we are right in the middle of the standings and so close to the top of the table. And but last week against Western New York at home, I thought it was really a complete performance. I thought we were the better team in all facets of the game. And even physically, we looked like the team that was home playing in this Houston Heat, you know, to our advantage. I think we really wore Western New York down. So I think right now the big key is we've got Washington on the road. They're a point ahead of us in the standings right now, and it's on the road, and it's the last game before we get those national team players back. So this will be another big game for us on the road, and hopefully we can kind of duplicate that that performance that we had last week against Western.
Randy, I know you don't know for sure, or maybe you do know for sure. I shouldn't be putting words into your mouth, but your six players that are at the World Cup, depending on how far they go, I mean, we would expect them to be back for the Chicago Red Star game on July 12th, right?
I think that is the plan. All of our communications with both Canada and the U.S. has those players coming back and being ready to play for us on the 12th. So it'll be, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, great for the fans to circle that date because it'll be kind of the welcome back. And, you know, who knows, maybe Canada and the U.S. will be facing each other in the World Cup final. So that would be a great way for the Dash players to end their World Cup.
Randy, as always, we thank you for your expertise. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, as always, Glenn. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye. The coach of the Houston Dash, Randy Waldrum. All right, as we go to break here, a quick reminder here. You got the CONCACAF Gold Cup doubleheader coming up. This is Jamaica and Canada, 5:30 p.m., and then Costa Rica and El Salvador at 8. This is at BBVA Compass Stadium. It's Saturday, July 11th. Now, here is why this is important, soccer fans. Jamaica has Giles Barnes, and Jamaica also has Jermaine Taylor. They're two Dynamo players. You're going to be able to see two Dynamo players in BBVA Compass Stadium representing their home country of Jamaica, the Reggae Boys. What an opportunity. CONCACAF Gold Cup. It's the Group B doubleheader, Jamaica versus Canada, Costa Rica, and El Salvador at BBVA Compass Stadium. You can get tickets at the BBVA Compass Stadium box office, Ticketmaster, and throughout Houston. All right, we'll take a break now. We come back. We got a lot more to roll on here. It's Dynamo All Access, Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. I'm Glenn Davis.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo, Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gal Building overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
We're going right now to Guadalajara, Mexico, where one of the great contributors to this show, Tom Marshall, joins me, a writer for ESPNFC.com. You can catch all his writings over there, and has just his finger on the pulse of what goes on with all the Mexican national teams and, of course, Liga MX. Tom, thank you very much for coming on the program.
No, thanks for having me, Glenn. It's always good fun.
All right, well, let's start it off with Copa America. Mexico did not have the best of efforts down there. I know it is somewhat of a split squad. What sort of pressure has come down from the media about that performance in Copa America? And then I would tag that with, must Mexico win the Gold Cup now?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely been intense. I mean, it's, you know, there's been, especially today, I mean, today is actually exactly 1 year since Mexico beat Croatia in the World Cup to advance from the group stage. So, you know, that was a massive victory for Mexico and Miguel Herrera. And 1 year on, there's been a lot of articles in the newspaper today about, one of the headlines was, where's the love gone between Mexico fans and Miguel Herrera? So, yeah, I mean, the Copa America has been a disaster. And I think it's not just the results and the performances, but it's also Miguel Herrera's kind of been saying things and doing things that people haven't really liked. And his popularity now is really in an all-time low.
Yeah, so take me into that a little bit more detailed. What has he done that has sort of irked the fans? Is it team selection? Is it player selection? Is it the tactical setup, the use of individuals? And why is the shine off Herrera so much now? Is it purely based on results?
I think, obviously, results are a massive factor, but I honestly think it's more off-the-field incidents. Like, he sent a tweet out before one of the preparation games against Brazil, which was basically urging people to support one of the political parties down here. And, you know, a lot of people really didn't like that. They didn't like the fact he was, you know, on a game day, giving his own opinions via his Twitter account on a political issue. And then, you know, he's doing all these commercials that I think people are sick of now. When Mexico have lost, he tends to blame the referee. I mean, it's just something that's almost a guarantee that he's going to blame the referee if Mexico lose. And, you know, on Saturday, there was a press conference, and he almost seemed like he was calling out one of the TV commentators down here for a fight. I mean, jeez. What he said was, like, he almost called him out and, like, say, oh, right, when I see you, you know, we're going to sort this issue out. Now, you know, he later said, you know, he's going to discuss it, but he really came across like he wanted to have a fight with him, which is a bit ridiculous, to be honest. So, yeah, I think it's more off-the-field stuff, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think he's in fighting shape right now. He'd need a couple weeks in the gym before he, you know, maybe maybe Freddie Roach needs to take him in there and shape him up a little bit before he decides to pick fights with people. But is it an ego now coming out here? Because, look, this guy was beloved and probably still is beloved in many ways beyond belief. Do you think this is ego? Because I got to think anybody in the public eye who's going to become political, number one, is crazy. Number two, he does seem to enjoy the limelight because he is a great character, and I don't think there's any question about that. But, boy, when you're managing a football team and your players are watching you do all this stuff publicly, I can't see that how that can behoove him.
It has been poor from him. And I say that because he's made mistakes, for example, the political tweet. And then instead of kind of being like, right, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it, I'm going to stop now and I'm just going to focus on the field things. Because at the end of the day, he's not been that bad on the field. The results haven't been that bad. I mean, Copa America, yeah, but he was a definite B squad. With his A squad, he's not been as terrible as it seems from if you read the press down here. But I think he doesn't know when to stop. And I think he's all good with the press when kind of everyone's praising him, but he can't take criticism. And that goes back to when he was America coach and Atlantic coach. He doesn't like to be criticised. He doesn't know how to deal with it. And then when you project that onto the national team level, it's just a whole new world for him. And at the moment, he just looks really stressed. He looks tired. You know, he's had a lot of travelling down to Chile and then back up now to the US. So, you know, the pressure is really legitimately on now. And there are changes in the federation as well. There's going to be a new president taking over later in the year. So, you know, the Gold Cup is an absolute must now. And that's just not me saying that. That's the federation, Herrera, players, the media, absolutely everybody.
Is it disappointing to you to see this effort in Copa America from Mexico? I mean, I go back to the days Luis Hernandez and, you know, I think it was the 99 Copa America. I'm trying to remember which one it was where, you know, they went out and shocked Brazil and scored a couple goals early and almost beat Brazil. And, you know, is it just too much for Mexico? Is there enough talent there to produce a good enough squad for Copa America and the Gold Cup? And do you think it's, you know, maybe you should be doing what the U.S. is? I think it's a missed opportunity for the United States not being in the Copa America, getting that sort of competition and experience bank for players. But what's your thought?
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, it's an opportunity to cut your teeth against some of the best in the world. I mean, three of the top five teams in the world, according to the FIFA rankings, are in the Copa America. So, you know, you're playing against the very best teams. I mean, the really disappointing thing for me about this Mexico team was that the average age was over 28 for each of the starting 11s. And I mean, you know, all right, you're going to do badly like Mexico did badly in 2011, but they sent an under-22 team then. So at least those players got experience in the bag. This time around, I think 70 to 80% of the players that Mexico fielded in the Copa America will never ever play again for the national team. So I think not just in terms of like sending your best team there, but also to give youngsters a go down there. I mean, I agree. It's a completely wasted opportunity.
All right, let's move on, and we're talking to Tom Marshall here of ESPN FC in Guadalajara, Mexico. And again, Tom, we truly thank you for all your great contributions to this show. Let's talk about Chicharito. I mean, there's a couple of big things going on with him. Obviously, his participation for the national team, but where do you think his next move is, and where may we see him go?
I mean, it's a difficult one. He's definitely not short of offers. His agents come out and said that you know, from Turkey to the United States to Spain, Germany, Italy, England. I mean, he's basically got offers from everywhere. It's a bit of an unknown. I think that more than ever now, I think that obviously he's 27 years old. It's got to be a move where to a club that he's definitely going to play. I mean, there's no absolute guarantees at that level of club soccer, but I mean, he has to be a shoo-in. There's no point in going now to Real Madrid. Because I think that if he does, then he's already got the reputation of being a super sub, which he absolutely hates. It's only going to re-emphasise that. And I think that for the national team as well, he's not guaranteed to start the Gold Cup. I mean, Mexico's got four very good strikers. So, you know, he's got work to do there as well. So it's once again a massive summer for Chicharito and so many unknowns.
I sympathise with him. I'm going to tell you why. Because I think he got the Manchester United interest and the Real Madrid interest at the wrong time of his career. But then again, as a young man, when Manchester United comes for you, how do you turn it down? You can't turn it down. And maybe his career is kind of going backwards. He should have been at some more mid-level clubs playing first-team football all the time and then progressed to a Manchester United or a Real Madrid at that point, as opposed to now, you know, he's got to find a deal, like you said, that's going to get him consistent playing time so that he can prove out being the 90-minute man that he wants to be.
No, definitely. I mean, yeah, you do sympathize as well, because, I mean, even last summer, it's like, how can you turn down Real Madrid? And I think that when you get to that level as well, I think players, obviously, they have an ego, and I think that he would have thought, and, you know, let's not forget, he's won, you know, two Premier League titles, he's played in Champions League final. He would have thought, right, if I can get an early opportunity at Real Madrid, get ahead of Benzema, which I know is a big ask, but, you know, he would have definitely thought that, then why can't I be the star? Why can't I be alongside Ronaldo and Gareth Bale? So, I mean, he took that opportunity. It didn't work out, but yeah. I mean, the bottom line now is that unless he wants to be remembered as this kind of super sub figure, and he has to go to a club where he's going to get regular minutes and score some goals, because at the end of the day, and if he, you know, in the space of the next 18 months, he's going to be Mexico's highest ever goal scorer. I think he's only six away from Borghetti at the minute. So, you know, he's closing in on that as well.
Well, that was part one with Tom Marshall down in Guadalajara, and we've got so much more to talk with him. We'll take a quick break here. This break brought to you by 7-Up. We come back, more Tom Marshall of ESPN FC.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Bud Light, on your home for the Houston Dynamo, Yahoo Sports Radio 1560, from high atop the Gal Building overlooking the Galleria. Here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back, everybody, and as we continue with the Best in Soccer Talk here, a quick reminder, Gold Cup is coming up down at the BBVA Compass Stadium, and Bud Light reminds you to get down there to take in the Gold Cup. You can watch Jamaica with Jermaine Taylor and Giles Barnes. How cool is that for you, the Houston Dynamo fan, to see your players in action for their country in their home stadium at BBVA Compass Stadium? Bud Light reminds you, you can get your season tickets at HoustonDynamo.com for both the Houston Dynamo and the Houston Dash. Get out, experience the game live. Don't just watch it in the pub. Don't just watch it at home on TV. Get out to the stadium with like-minded individuals. And as always, I thank Bud Light personally for all their support for me, Soccer Matters, Dynamo All Access, over all the years on the radio airwaves here in Houston. Thank you, Bud Light. Time now for part two with Tom Marshall. I want to take you to another player, Marco Fabian, who has always shown so many glimpses of just exciting play. I mean, overhead bicycle kicks. The guy is obviously a talented footballer. Why can't he get to the next level?
it's a huge question. I'm not even sure what's up with him. I think he's a player who needed to leave Mexico, to be honest, earlier, because he needed a change of scenery. He needed a change of, you know, environment, of people who were talking to him, the people who were training him. And yeah, as his career at the minute now, he's 25, going on 26. He's not young anymore. You know, he's still talking about going to Europe, but, you know, at the end of the day, you look at the Copa America, you look at Mexico's B squad, and he played in one of the three games. He came off the bench once. I mean, it's not a great indication of the level he's at. And I think that, yeah, he really, at the minute, he's just so inconsistent with his performance. He's so brilliant at times, but just fails to live up to that. And I think that, that's the weakness in his game.
He's Tom Marshall. You can follow him on Twitter. At Mexico World Cup is his handle. I suggest you follow him. Some of the best stuff coming when it comes to really digging into the Mexican national team football in Mexico and Liga MX and following all the players that from Mexico are playing around the world in various leagues. All right, I'm going to take you to the Women's World Cup because you are on the ground in Mexico. Has there been any interest in the Mexican women's national team in Canada? And does anybody care about Mexican women's football?
Yeah, I think when the World Cup comes around, it is of interest. And I think that especially this time around, because it went so badly. I mean, Mexico have yet to win a game at the Women's World Cup in the whole history. I think this was the third time they've been in the competition, but this was the competition that Mexico were due to advance from. I mean, they're ranked higher than Colombia, and they failed to beat Colombia. So the reaction now is that Leo Cuellar, who's the head coach, I think he's been around for over 10 years, I think it's 15 years. I mean, he's coming under fire now, and it'll be a big surprise if he continues, because we had Mexico's probably biggest player, Charlin Corral, who came out and said, look, it's time for change, you know. This guy's been good for us, but we now need to move this forward. I mean, you know, other countries are overtaking us, like Colombia and even Costa Rica. So I think this could be making a bit of a bad summer for Mexico all around, really, even with the under-20s and the women and then the Copa America. So, I don't know, it's a bit of a bad time for the federation.
Tom, do you get a sense there's a bit of tokenism with the Mexican women's national team? In other words, are they investing in that team? Are they truly investing in it? Because as I look at the Mexican women's national team, it started off first as getting contacts with players in the United States and somehow trying to get people citizenship from the U.S. to play for them. Now there's more native, people that are players that live in Mexico, a part of the team. But has there really been investment from the federation, or is this just, hey, we kind of have to do this because, you know, women's football is growing around the world? And that's not to say the players aren't giving it their all and the coach isn't giving it their all, but is there truly enough investment? And is this a World Cup that could maybe make the Mexican Football Federation take it even more serious?
Yeah, I think there's a league that's going to start up pretty shortly, which will help. But, I mean, it's an amateur league, and I think it's more of a tournament than a proper official league. I mean, I think the way you've got to look at it with Mexico is that Mexican Federation makes a lot of money. I mean, you know, the games in the United States they play, you know, the games in Mexico, the amount of shirts they sell, this federation makes a lot of money, and it's their decision what to do with that money. And I think, obviously, you know, whoever's deciding where the money should go isn't giving enough to the female game. And I mean, you know, if you look at it on a kind of societal level as well, I mean, it could have a huge impact if Mexico's women can actually do something at a World Cup. I mean, you know, for the whole of society, it could change perceptions, because Mexico's a country where, you know, the kind of macho culture still kind of pervades. And then I think women's football can have a big role in, you know, not obviously changing it completely, but kind of eroding that and helping women's rights, basically.
Yeah, this is a bit of a social issue. I don't think there's any question. I mean, teams like Ecuador that are in this, Colombia. I mean, I look at Colombia, I look at a country like France who, you know, 6 years ago I watched France and I go, wow, these girls have tremendous technique. There are some real similarities with the footballing culture of French now, of France, that is coming through these ladies. And I remember them outplaying the United States, and they get in and around the 18-yard box. And they just did not have the power and strength to produce a goal and beat a goalkeeper like Hope Solo. Fast forward a couple of years, now they've got the physical side of the game, and that gap has been narrowed, and now they've married the two together, and they're difficult. And I saw that with Colombia as well. It's fascinating to see these great soccer-playing nations begin to take the women's game more serious, because you see it morphing before your eyes, and this is where I think the United States is maybe – been left behind a little bit, because as fast as other countries have progressed athletically, I don't think we've progressed technically and tactically as fast as we should in order to keep up with that athletic growth from other countries from around the world.
No, I mean, that's it for Mexico in a nutshell. I mean, there's not been that development. I think it doesn't matter where you start off, you know, the level of United States or where Mexico has come from, which is obviously quite a bit behind, but I think the real criticism here is that under Leo Cuellar, there's not been that kind of development. They've not been improving. I mean, still to win a game at the World Cup, I mean, tactically, I think, you know, the criticism that he's not kind of at the cutting edge of... I mean, look at the England manager. You know, he's played a different tactical system every game, you know, and they've made history by going to the quarterfinals. Look at Colombia, who've done, you know, an incredible World Cup. And I think Mexico kind of just like, why aren't we involved in this? Yeah, well, it's going to be fascinating to see if there is a change in the managerial hot seat for the women's team.
All right, last thing. I just want to quickly go to Ronaldinho, then we'll let you go, Tom. And again, thank you very much for coming on the program. All right, so Ronaldinho goes to Querétaro. He kind of puts them on the map. In some ways, I make it a similarity to when David Beckham came here, although I think Beckham's reach was bigger because it was a whole league that he was sort of representing. But in some form or fashion, the star quality of Ronaldinho coming to Querétaro and spending time there despite the fact that, you know, he didn't have the good training habits and all that, I got to think it maybe has helped this club as far as gaining some exposure and maybe lifting them to a new level of competitive spirit in Liga MX.
Yeah, I think that you can kind of divide it between off the field. Obviously, it's been a massive boom, and I think the president of the club has said, you know, we've just got so, obviously so much more press, so much more interest in our club than we've ever had. And I think on the field, it was mixed, to be honest. There was some decent moments, but overall, I felt that Ronaldinho wasn't at the level to kind of make the team better. So I'd say it's mixed, but definitely in terms of, you know, putting not just Querétaro, but I think the league as well, because nobody really considered Mexico as the kind of league that someone like Ronaldinho would come to. And now, you know, there's talk that Robinho might be replacing him at Querétaro. And obviously we've seen André Pierre Gignac come into Tigres. And I think, you know, I don't know, I think it's too early to say that the ball is actually rolling, but it might be just like a little turning point here where we're seeing Mexico actually become a place where you know, big-name players and even Europe-based players are kind of looking to with some interest.
Very interesting, Tom. And listen, I guess Ronaldinho is, you know, I think down in Brazil, there's a Brazilian club. I'm not sure who it is. I think it's Vasco da Gama that probably has the same idea with Ronaldinho. Now let's bring him here. It's not necessarily about how much we get out of him on the field, but it's an opportunity to kind of thrust our team into the spotlight, get more media attention. It's an interesting type of signing. Let's just put it that way.
No doubt, yeah. It's a different way of doing things. It's almost like, you know, the MLS has always had that idea. But then I think it'd be very interesting now to see if other Mexican clubs as well kind of pick up on this and be like, you know, wait, we've got money as well, because we know that the Liga MX, the clubs have, if there's one thing they have, it is money. So it'd be interesting to see if any of them think, oh, you know, look what Querétaro did. You know, why don't we follow that? I mean, you know, look at the attention and the, you know, like you said, Glenn, at the start, they put us on the map. And Ronaldinho put Querétaro, a minnow in the Liga MX terms, onto the map. So, it's something definitely to look out for.
Well, Tom, thank you very much. As always, we appreciate you wrapping up our show in style here tonight. You're the best. You're from Guadalajara. You're Tom Marshall. You can catch his writings at ESPN FC. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Glenn. Appreciate it.
And Tom, by the way, is going to be in Houston coming up here, and I owe him a dinner as Mexico will play Honduras coming up here in July. That'll wrap it up tonight. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Also, make sure you get over to Facebook, Soccer Matters. That's where it's all at. And again, we thank all the great sponsors of this show. Thank you, Bud Light, as we say goodnight.